Hi, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, and you are listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
Space junkies, and welcome to an action-packed, overflowing episode of What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We are proud to be your source for Star Wars information, reviews, and of course, crazy fan theories. So please make sure to stop on over at your local cantina, grab a drink, and cozy up to your favorite alien or droid, and let's get ready to talk Star Wars. Joining me this week are my usual co-pilots and also my number two son, Joseph Bottman. Joseph, how's it going, bud?
Good. It's exciting to be back, this time for a full episode.
Yes, we're excited that you get to stick with us for the entire time, although this episode will be slightly shorter than usual, or at least slightly shorter than the last few episodes. But it will still include plenty of action from co-captain Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going, man?
So excited to join you guys and talk some Star Wars. As you mentioned, this is action-packed, and we'll have some more great, exciting announcements to talk about. Let's get ready to talk some Mandalorian. But first off, Nathan, how's it going this week, sir?
It's a nice, warm day here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Near 70 degrees in the middle of December. I think somebody got their weather orders mixed up. But you know what's very consistent? The Mandalorian comes out every Friday now. And I'm so excited to talk about this episode.
Yes, this episode, chapter 15, The Believer, took some characters in some directions that I was not expecting them to go. But more on that later. First, we want to remind all of you where you can find us out there on the internet. Our master feed for the Fandom Podcast Network is fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can find us on the Podbean app or Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and now the worldwide iHeartRadio Network. Derek runs our Facebook group, which is simply What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. I do still check email between shows, which you can reach us at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. I run our Twitter account over there on Twitter at WhatWars, and we are on Instagram under the Fandom Podcast Network. And Derek, tell us about those Apple Podcast reviews, please, sir.
Yeah, so when you download our product and you're listening to it, and when you're completed, or if you just get fed up halfway and decide to turn it off, just make sure you leave us a review beforehand. Again, we love five-star reviews because, you know, we don't want to upset any Wookiees in the building. But as Nathan was just saying there, but you know, we'll take any feedback, all feedback, so we can make a better show. But again, those Wookiee children need to eat, so if you leave us 5-star reviews, that helps feed the Wookiee children, and fortunately then no one's arms will also get ripped off.
Yes, that is a really bad way to end a review there. All right, well, it's time for Derek's favorite part of the show. What Star Wars t-shirts are we wearing this week? Derek, what you got?
All right, so it kind of goes with the next episode that we're going to have, which is I'll mention it now, the Snippets episode 4, where we're going to talk tons and tons of Star Wars stuff. And I'm super excited for it. But let's just see. I'm also this.
Ah, excellent.
Oh, you got a bad feeling about this.
Yes. The beautiful red shirt with Star Wars font. I've got a bad feeling about this. A little apprehensive, are we, Derek?
I will go more into it. I don't want to spoil it yet. So, but yeah, since we're recording two episodes here, we're wearing the same shirts, but that's my shirt.
Cool.
Nathan, what shirt did you got on today?
Well, I might be the reason that you're having a bad feeling right now, because on Friday after Thanksgiving, on Black Friday, I went to Her Universe and bought not one, but two new t-shirts. And I'm wearing one of them today.
Wow.
And it's a Darth Maul t-shirt. It's got, I am not sure what the material is, but it's
not the, a jersey.
It's not a jersey, no. But it's got the cloth, and then it's got the tattoos on top of that. And it's got
almost like a leather fabric.
Almost, yeah. And then it's got his face on the back. Unfortunately, you can't see that because I'm not turning around. but he's got his chest tattoos on the front and his face on the back. I will say, this shirt, I might not wear it all that often because it's fitted for somebody who's got a slightly different physique than I do. That is to say, not fat.
But it's a little tight in the chest, is what you're saying?
Oh, no, the chest is fine. The chest is perfectly fine. It's a little lower down that it gets a little tight.
That old wookie belly.
Yep. Yeah, my quarantine 10, 15, 20.
Quarantine 15 is, shall we say. But
it's quarantine 19. Come on, guys.
I'm bringing the average up.
Well, it's a cool looking shirt anyway, Nathan.
Yes. Yes, I agree. It looks awesome. I'll wear it on special occasions like this recording, but I'll save it for special occasions. Scott, what t-shirt are you wearing today?
So I, too, was slightly inspired by the big Star Wars news of the week that we'll discuss in a very special Snipset episode later. But we know we're getting a Lando follow-up of some kind. So I wore my Star Wars Solo-inspired shirt that has the red background with the big sun rising behind our intrepid band from that movie. So it includes young Han Solo, Tobias Beckett, Chewie, L337, and of course, young Han Solo and young Lando Calrissian. And Kira is the other person on this shirt. So I was inspired and I'm like, hey, since Lando's getting his own deal, I should wear a shirt that has Lando on it. Make Solo 2 happen as Lando, apparently, is how we're going to have to modify that.
Well, maybe. We don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. But hey, it gives me great pleasure to say this line on the show once again. Joseph, what Star Wars t-shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing my Force Awakens Kylo Ren promo t-shirt.
Yes, Joseph had that shirt before he saw the movie. So he's very excited to get to wear it again. And as I often tell folks in the Facebook group for the podcast, my kids love the sequel trilogy, and given an opportunity to wear a Star Wars shirt, Joseph has chosen his favorite sequel trilogy character, Kylo Ren. Actually, Joseph, I should, well, you know what? I'll ask you this on the Snipset episode, but there was a Sith-focused series announced, so I'm going to ask you what you think that's going to be about. Anyway, if you would like to support the show and get your own cool What a Piece of Junk t-shirt, please check out our T Public store. Go on over to tpublic.com and just search up the Fandom Podcast Network. And you can find not just t-shirts, but cool things like hoodies, mouse pads, iPad cases, coffee mugs, et cetera, et cetera. And you can show your support both for our show and for the Fandom Podcast Network in general. And you can support friend of the show, Terry Lee, who has her own geekypockettees.com project going on, where you can get cool pocket t-shirts for things like Star Wars, Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, or just about any of the crazy geeky genre properties that we all like to follow here in the new millennium. And they have an awesome customized left breast pocket that's a really sturdy connection. I trust it to hold my cell phone and all kinds of things when I'm wearing that shirt. So it's good stuff, everybody. Check it out at geekypockettees.com.
And yes, and I will say mine is washed. I just haven't got a chance to wear it yet.
Awesome sauce. I'm glad it got there safely. Well, ordinarily, this is the part of the show where I head over to the bar and talk about Star Wars news. But there's so much Star Wars news this week that, like we said, we're going to do a special Snipset episode just to cover that. So I will head over to the bar to get something to drink. But I'm going to pause for a few moments while Kevin tells us what else is happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson and her current cold virus, and you are listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a whole year in movies. The End Zone, our NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. The Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast. A deep dive into the final frontier with host Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and now iHeartRadio. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Hi, this is Eric Walker, the original Mace, the OM in the universe. Sorry, Sam Jackson. And you're listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Kevin and friends. And Joseph and I were able to find some pretty good drinks here on... Gosh, what planet should we be on? I guess.
I'm trying to think what chapter 15, what planet they were on. What's that called?
Morak? Morak? Yes. Morak. We're on Morak drinking at a little shanty in that native village. I'm slugging down a hard pull of double cola, which I've discussed on the show several times. Chattanooga, Tennessee's own 1930s era inspired old school cola with actual sugar. And Joseph is drinking, or just finished drinking,
Hank's vanilla cream soda.
Yeah, so
delicious.
Oh, and it looks like Derek is getting ready to rock something in a mug of some kind. What do you got there, Derek?
Well, this is one of the mugs that my wife and I got margaritas from on the Las Vegas Strip back in the day when you could actually go to Las Vegas and go on the Strip and enjoy life.
It's like a terrifying giant.
It's a skull.
What?
Yeah, it's a skull from Treasure Island. So, but I just wanted to hold mine up since it was sharing drinks and I'm drinking water with sweet tea flavor in it.
Ooh, okay. Nathan, you're the odd man out with no beverage.
Who said I had no beverage? I have a sparkling ice flavored water, black raspberry flavor, my favorite.
Yes, we're going to help you.
Nice.
Okay. Joseph and I are the only ones.
Get away from sodas to lose that 15.
Especially at 9:45 p.m. at night.
Yeah, well, you know.
Going to be up partying all night.
We are. Hey, it's Friday night. What else are we going to do, right?
Star Wars.
Yep, we're going to do Star Wars. And specifically, Joseph, we're doing Chapter 15 of The Mandalorian. Do you remember what Chapter 15 was titled?
The Believer.
The Believer, yes. And what was it that you texted to me and your brother?
I texted the image title and an image of Din Djarin wearing the Stormtrooper armor. And I said, it made me believe.
Yep, he said, it made a believer out of me. Guys, it made a believer out of me, too, to see our hero quickly switch into Stormtrooper armor, or actually to me it looked like slightly modified Shore Trooper armor. But yeah, it was crazy to see that when the chips were down, Din was more than willing to go ahead and take off his helmet and swap it out for a different helmet to do what was necessary to save Grogu. I'm jumping the gun a bit on the synopsis, but to me, that is the headline moment of this episode. Is that Din forsook his creed long enough to swap helmets and then later just straight up take it off so that he could use the Imperial Access Terminal. I'm going to just go ahead and start out by saying I gave this episode a good 4 stars out of 5 because the action was amazing and the character development for the titular Mandalorian himself was huge. What do you guys think? Derek?
So I will first start off by saying this is my favorite episode thus far of the season.
Wow. High praise, especially considering last week's.
Yeah, no, this to me, as we talked about, was the whole, back in season one, the prisoner episode with, the whole heist and everything. This is exactly what I want out of The Mandalorian. I like the overarching story, but I like it the most, I think, when we get a band of people together and they need to perform some type of task, whether it's a heist or whether it's getting the secret data, kind of like we had in Rogue One, whatever that job needs to be. Preferably, I would like more Mandalorian bounty hunting, but obviously we haven't gotten to so much of that, even though that's what he's supposed to be, at least at some point in his life. But yeah, I think this has been my favorite episode. But to answer your question, I'm not surprised or really, for what we've seen in season one, when he took off his helmet in front of IG-11 to basically save Face or save himself. Right.
Yeah.
So he's done that once. And then two, the fact that he did it behind basically in the locker room, right, where nobody saw him, I don't think that's such a big deal, right? Granted, him taking the armor off, I guess in some sense is important, but at the same time, it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess, but to me, it was all about showing your face was the more important thing.
And he definitely did that in the Imperial cafeteria.
Well, yeah. So, but at first when he does that, and then prior to doing that, you have the whole conversation between Din and Mayfield, and that to me is where the episode shines, where again Mayfield's conversation piece to Din saying, people are all high and mighty about their own beliefs until push comes to shove or shit hits the fan, or until it best suits them of when they need to not be that so-called person or that follower of that believer or whatever, and like he said, whether it's Alderaan or Mandalore, doesn't matter, they're all blown up, right?
Yeah, although I feel like, Nathan, perhaps by the end of the episode, Mayfield himself isn't in that particular headspace anymore. He has taken a stand against the remnants of the Empire, maybe even taken a stand against his own former self, and shot that guy, Velen Hess, in the face right there in front of everybody after he was essentially celebrating Operation Cinder. Nathan, do you feel Mayfield had some character growth this episode? Because I think he did.
Oh, Mayfield had a lot of character growth. Derek, you mentioned the episode The Prisoner from last season as an episode that you particularly liked. I actually felt like that was the weakest episode of the first season. I didn't enjoy it so much because I really didn't enjoy Mayfield.
Clancy Brown is so disappointed in you, Nathan.
He can be disappointed in me. I felt like he
played will have his revenge.
I feel like he played the best character out of those rogues. Mayfield, I didn't like as much. But this episode, in my mind, redeemed him. And his points actually kind of came through on himself as well. He had his own ideas of, freedom and, doing whatever he wanted and not risking his own skin if he could help it. But when the chips were down and he was faced with the reality of the Empire, he said, "Now, forget my own personal safety. I've got to do something about this." Now, he might have been acting rather rash, as C-3PO would put it. But, he, in the end, did what he felt he had to do.
Yeah, this, I know, again, you guys hate it, but there's actually, there is some decent characters in the Aftermath series. I mean, again, we've gotten Cobb Vanth out of it. And then you get a couple of decent characters in regards to Sinjir Rathvi and Rey, who's both, one's a previous Imperial officer and one is a current Imperial officer, and you get that take where I feel that Velen Hess and Mayfield conversation is exactly where it is, where you have people that still believe that the empire is the way to go, that, you know, people praise freedom, but at the end of the day, they really want order. Mm-hmm. And that's what the empire brings. And then you have people like Mayfield who did something, whether they were forced to or not, but they did something and they realized it was awful and they regret it and it's burning in them. And you have those two conflicts where this episode, because what I really loved seeing was behind the scenes of the Empire. Again, they make it through this dangerous tread of being, you know, stalked by whether driving the vehicle and the or what was the explosive called?
Rhydonium,
yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, then those savages or the locals are, you know, trying to steal it or blow it up and whatnot. And you see them make it and they're being cheered on. Like you would see the rebels coming back from blowing up the Death Star scene. But yet the Empire, you know, the shore troopers and the stormtroopers and the officers are all lining up and, you know, they're all clapping and praising, hey, you guys made it. Great job. You know, hooray, you know, and they're all giving each other high fives and, you know, saluting each other and all that. And that's what I like about this, where you're seeing not just, like, again, you could say what you want. The Imperials are the bad guys, I guess. But at the same time, it's what some people believe to be the right way. And it doesn't mean that they're wrong. It's just that's what they choose to believe.
No, I think they're wrong. They're very, very, very wrong.
Look, only one side in this particular conflict has baby-sized shackles. So I'm just going to say it, yes.
But what happens if Moff Gideon's actually trying to find the cure of cancer with this?
He's not.
You know?
He's not. And you know.
Well, I'm not saying that he's also not trying to build a super army like most military men are. But at the same time, they might be trying to find the cure for whatever COVID-19 is out there in Star Wars land right now.
Even if that were true, the ends do not justify the means.
I don't know. Correct. I'm not saying you kill one person to do the, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right? You don't.
Wrong franchise.
Yes, awesome. But that's still a philosophy is there.
There's a couple of reasons that I feel like the Empire is absolutely in the wrong, even just within this episode.
Well, we'll get into those in just a moment. First, I'd like to give Joseph a chance to give his initial assessment of the episode. Son, do you think Mayfield had character growth? Did you like it better or worse than Mayfield's previous episode?
My favorite part about Chapter 15 was when Din and Mayfield were in the little tank compactor thing.
The juggernaut.
Yeah, that. Where they had like their little moment of him going how everybody's the same on the insider and stuff like that. And then when I got to the little part where the pirates were coming on their little hover speeders trying to blow up the
Rhydonium.
Whatever.
Yes. Yes. The what? The
whatever.
The unobtainium.
The possassium infinionite.
The blow upium.
The kryptonite.
another franchise, yes.
I like it when Ben was, you know, actually using his combat instead of just trying to shoot everybody because he threw the pistol and it was just great because earlier in the seasons or in season one, he wasn't that too great at fist-to-fist combat. So seeing him actually, you know, doing stuff with fist-to-fist combat was actually pretty cool. That was like one of my favorite parts. And then seeing the, you know, the stormtroopers and shore troopers cheering them on. It's just moments like that in the, you know, off shows for like the Empire. I like seeing stuff like that and I want to see more.
Joseph gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an excellent analysis there, son. So Nathan, you were going to say there are some reasons that you felt that the Empire was in the wrong within this very episode.
Yes, two of them specifically. One has to do with those pirates that Din fought, that Joseph was just talking about. Those pirates weren't really pirates. They weren't trying to steal the Rhydonium. They were trying to keep the Empire from getting the Rhydonium, because they definitely were not concerned about their own safety. They were willing to take themselves out to take out this Rhydonium. So,
but do we know that it wasn't another gangster overlord who also had the other side and he was competing for market franchise, you know, shares in Rhydonium? and that he was sending his goons to sabotage the Empire so they couldn't compete?
Goons generally go on suicide missions willingly.
Again, if he's holding their families hostage, they will. So I'm just saying, you don't know that. Yes, you're probably right. You could assume that the villagers are trying to do the right thing, but again, you don't know.
Right. So how about when the Empire specifically mentions that what they're going to do with the Rhydonium will make Project Cinder look like just another day?
Yeah, which is pretty terrifying. Operation Cinder, of course, being the scorched earth policy that Palpatine had set up to be put into place should he ever be deposed or killed or apparently overthrown. And in the video game Star Wars Battlefront 2, you get to see and live through Operation Cinder, where Palpatine instructs the remaining Imperial forces after the Battle of Endor to turn various planetary defense grids against the planets that they were set up to defend, and just basically orbital strike entire cities to death, which Mayfield references when he says that, one of the cities was destroyed and about 5,000 to 10,000 people got killed immediately, instantaneously. And they were also, losing some of the Imperial forces that were there fighting on the ground, including most of Mayfield's unit and his whole division.
When you start killing your own people just to kill more of the enemy, it's really hard to defend your own actions.
Hey, Longshanks had to do the same, right? So,
Longshanks also was a terrible guy. Yeah, I think that it is pretty patently obvious that the Empire, or at least this particular secret Imperial mining facility, is in the wrong in this episode. To say nothing of clearly they are oppressing the natives of this very underdeveloped, essentially thinly veiled allegory of a third world country. There, when we see Mayfield and Din driving through and looking at the natives, and Mayfield gives a speech about, it doesn't matter to these people whether it's Empire or New Republic. Somebody out there in the galaxy is being ruled, and somebody out there in the galaxy is ruling over them. In this case, it's obvious that the Empire is keeping them under their armored boot, so much so that a race of piratey dudes that are, I believe they were the same alien species as Orn Free Ta from the prequel trilogy. Don't you think, Nathan?
No. Oh. I thought
they were Wiki almost, but they weren't, so. When they were coming on the speeders, the rafts, I was like, "Oh, right, yeah, cool."
I thought they had the shorter head tails like Orn Free. I mean, obviously, Orn Free Ta was a much more healthily fed version of their species than these pirate raiders.
Well, Orn Free Ta is, despite how he looks, a Twi'lek.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. He's okay.
The weirdest looking Twi'lek out there, but he is a Twi'lek.
Is this like Klingon season one Discovery?
Not quite that bad. He's just, I guess that's what you look like when you're a fat Twi'lek.
No, he's well fed.
Yes, well fed. Well fed. Thank you, Joseph.
When you live the high life.
Yeah, there's a series of episodes, The Battle of Ryloth, where he and Harrison Dula's father kind of go against each other politically. And he is the less than savory political affiliation, whichever one that is on that planet.
Right. Well, so anyway, speaking of the piratey raiders.
But I can see why you would think that these piratey raiders would be the same species. They look more like he does than he does look like a Twi'lek.
Yeah. I know that we've seen the species of the pirate raiders in a Star Wars production before. I can't really call to mind the name of that species for now. I have to admit,
I did not recognize them. So you're ahead of me on that.
Yeah. I was so hoping Hondo was going to show up.
yeah, that would have been cool, but
blowing it up, right? Yeah, well, that was the thing. They were blowing it up. So at that point, I was like, well, then they're not actually pirates. They're just, you know, rebels type deal, or however you want to look at it, or locals, well, so, like you said.
Of course, I watched it with the closed captioning on, and it referred to them as pirates. But they didn't seem to be interested in stealing the Rhydonium. They just wanted to make sure the Empire didn't get it by blowing up the Juggernauts.
Plan A was thermal detonator.
Yeah, do you guys think that that they were other members of the native species on the planet, and they were just wanting to get the Empire off their world? Or were these off-world pirates that had come there specifically to attack this mining facility?
Or did the Empire steal it from their mining facility?
I think it has to do something with either the Empire stealing it from them, so they're like, well, we can't have it, nobody can. Or they're, you know, natives that live there said, man, the Empire need to go home somewhere, and said, plan A, thermal detonator.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. They're guerrilla fighters who are just like, stop oppressing us.
That's my take on it. It's guerrilla fighters.
But what I love about this episode, and back to the conversation piece too that we've been having, you know, I totally 100% agree, Nathan, with your sentiment that the Empire is bad. But at the same time, does this not remind you of actual real live nations that's doing this?
I'm going to say no. Okay. So that if we ever put this on YouTube, we can still be monetized. Well,
I will tell you this is the type of thing that makes you look hard in the mirror at yourself. And to your point, this to me is it asks this philosophical question of, you know, how come, as you know, people in first world countries tolerate what their governments do. Because this is exactly what America has done over the years. And it's your exact point is that it's bad, but yet we still allow it, or we tolerate it, as our government does this and our military does this, because then it allows us to have cheaper gas, or this is allows us to quote unquote have freedom. Yet those people in other countries don't have any of that. So that's why I like this episode, because it does hit home and makes it should make people stop and realize, okay, this is wrong, but yet it should, just because it's sci-fi and it's fantasy doesn't mean it shouldn't be talking to us in some manner.
Are we the baddies?
In some cases, people definitely see America as the baddies.
Well, not just that. We're the baddies because we're the people that are at another planet.
Yeah.
That our empire rules, and we allow the Empire or America to do the filthy things that they do so we can have that fat Twi'lek lifestyle.
Look, I'm not a Twi'lek. I know we talked about how the Maul shirt is a little tight around my belly, but I'm not a Twi'lek.
I didn't mean it directly at you, Nathan. We were just talking about why he was so fat, because he's living that Twi'lek lifestyle. Because he's a politician, right?
That is true, but that actually, I feel like that was the point of him.
Correct.
That heavyset, you know, in the Clone Wars arc that Ornfrita was in, he was definitely disassociated from the planet. Hadn't been back to the area that he was supposed to represent for quite some time.
Absolutely. And what were they? They were slaves, and they were starving, and they were, you know,
even in the prequel era, and for thousands of years before that, Twi'leks are like the slaves of the galaxy, the pleasure slaves of the galaxy, for what it's worth. Because even in episode one, The Phantom Menace, you see Saboba has Twi'lek basically slave girls attending to him before the pod race.
Yep.
They're mechanics, Scott.
Sure they are.
Totally.
Yeah, they're mechanics. They're just working on the mechanics of his manicure.
So to me, this is where Star Wars, how you guys have been talking about how Discovery has been so much Star Wars, this is where Star Wars is actually Star Trek.
Yes, this episode was a very Star Trekian, or at least Roddenberry-esque storyline with allegory that is thinly veiled. And speaking of thin veils, you like that segue? Let's talk a little bit about why Din Djarin has to be the guy that takes off his armor and puts on the transport trooper armor. Joseph, did you catch what it was that made it to where the Mandalorian himself had to be the guy to accompany Mayfield?
Because either everyone there has either worked for the Empire, going with Boba Fett there, or has been arrested by the Empire, going with Cara Dune and
Finnick Shan.
That.
Yes. Joseph, did you get the little in joke from Boba Fett when he said that he couldn't be the guy?
No, because I didn't hear what he said.
So, Nathan, I'm sure you were jumping up and down at the line. They might recognize my face.
I have to admit, it took me longer than I'd care to admit to catch that. It was still less than a second. But I at first thought, oh, yeah, because he worked with Vader. Oh, right. His face has been on every clone trooper since his father provided the DNA for him.
Yeah.
Most of the Empire working there were probably kids, but they probably remember them at some point.
Yes, that was just a gem of a joke for a really deep cut of Star Wars humor there. But speaking of Boba Fett and looking good, how about the refurb on his famous Mandalorian armor?
He definitely got the ultimate wax 2 at Jeff's Car Wash, that's for sure.
Oh, he put a whole new paint job on that armor.
Yeah. I almost wonder if he had some kind of a system in Slave One to do armor maintenance.
Oh, for sure.
Justin, do you think maybe he was like the armorer there and he was like heating it up and fixing the best car?
Well, I mean, with the moving cockpit, you would assume so.
Yeah. He's got, that ship has all kinds of extras built into it.
Although he kept the dent in the helmet.
He's always had the dent.
Right. But that's my point. I don't think he like reforged anything, because if he did, he probably would have gotten rid of that dent. No, but there was definitely paint in the dent.
I think he keeps that dent to remind him of his dad, because isn't that where the dent came from? Is when Jango was killed?
Yeah, when the little creature rhino thing bumped him.
I'd have to go back and watch Attack of the Clones to see if I can catch that.
Yeah, I think prior
to a reason to go back and watch Star Wars. Whatever shall I do?
Isn't that amazing, though? 20 years later, and you're still finding things to reference or Easter eggs that are there, right?
Yeah, I'm really hopeful that this scene gave me new respect for Finnick Shan. I'm really hopeful that we get like maybe a couple Marvel comics or even just a Marvel one-shot that explains what exactly Finnick Shan did to get wanted by the ISB. The Imperial Security Bureau are, a pretty unsavory lot.
If you want to hear more about that, make sure to check out our Snips episode that we're going to record right after this one, because I do have something to say about Finnick in that.
Sweet.
So, but yeah, I definitely when, well, you get the, well, first off, we were, Scott was right. This episode, they really literally start opening up where, you know, they go get Mayfield out of prison, right? Two minutes and they're done. Yep. But then it was the whole episode of where they didn't go find Moff Gideon. They had to go find the MacGuffin to go find MacGuffin Moff Gideon.
Yep.
So Moff MacGuffin. Try saying that 10 times fast, right? So
at least this MacGuffin makes sense. They need to figure out where Moff Gideon is.
Yeah.
So they work that into the plot. Well, it's not just, oh, we need
a dagger MacGuffin will get the Sith holocron to work, right?
We need to talk to Luke Skywalker's copy of the Sith holocron so we can unlock this dagger. anyway, we have everybody telling
Slayer
9000. Well, the best part was just when Boba shows up. He's like, oh, I thought you were another guy. And then it shows up dead after.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But I was like, yes, Boba got a car wash.
Car wash.
Oh, so those of us who have played Jedi Fallen Order, so Joseph, I'm looking at you here. Did you get flashbacks to Cal Kestis's beginnings when you saw Mayfield working in the chop fields and cutting up all that scrap?
Yes, at the very beginning of Fallen Order, it shows Cal working on the scrapyard from the Vinators from the Republic.
Yes. So is that three Easter eggs in this game so far related to video games?
I believe so, because we have
Battlefront 2.
Battlefront 2 with Fallen Operation Order. Ascender, Fallen Order with the chop fields, and then what was our third video?
I don't think we had to.
Did we have another video game reference so far?
I don't think we did.
In this episode?
It was just Battlefront 2 and Fallen
Order. Well, I guess it would kind of be Dark Forces when you're putting on the Stormtrooper armor, right?
Yeah, although one could say that that's simply an homage to A New Hope, where
correct. Yeah, I guess that would be that.
Outfits,
which I think is funny because when Mando did his little helmet thing, I was like, he's gonna wear the Stormtrooper armor.
Yeah,
and lo and behold,
yep. God, the scene where they're changing into the armor and Mayfield says, "Ah, oh, this guy reeked. His gloves are still wet." I was just like, that is the most disgusting thing I have ever heard in a Star Wars show.
And like Mayfield.
Yeah, we had a diagnosis.
And he was like, man, you can't see a thing. And Din just looks at him.
I feel like Mayfield trying to get under his skin to get a reaction out of him when he says, "How do you people wear these things?" And then he pauses and goes, "And by you people, I do mean Mandalorians."
But just in case it wasn't clear what I was talking about, be rather explicit.
But I kind of hope that we get to see Mayfield again in an episode of one of the other myriad series that had been announced, because he had great chemistry with Cara Dune, I thought, in this episode.
He's the Jedi.
He tried to.
Yeah, I was thoroughly disappointed that Mayfield didn't join up with them afterwards.
I mean, nothing says that he won't show back up on The Mandalorian, obviously.
Obviously, right. But at the same time, I was like, hey, let's join another one.
Yeah.
I feel like he will show up sometime next season. I was hoping he would show up next episode.
Which is still possible.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like that would... I feel like if he was going to be in the next episode, he would have just stuck with them.
Yeah, yeah. I would not classify it as probable, just possible.
I mean, this is just like another side quest.
Yes.
He had to go armor up.
Side quest. Yeah.
No, I thought that, everybody has a concern for the little green guy, so.
Yeah, it was cool. And you kind of, I enjoyed the look on Mayfield's face when they referred to Grogu as Din's son, because when he was there, Grogu, or at the time the child, was basically being referred to almost as Din's pet. And of course, this season we have had Din refer to him as a good luck charm, which I love. but in this case, in the case of Mayfield in season one, he basically acted like he was a pet. So it was great to see Mayfield sort of slowly put it all together when they talked about, you know, they have his kid. That he's like, wait, the little green guy? You can almost hear him saying in the back of his mind, that is your kid? You know, because he...
It's not biological.
Natalia, or I can't remember her character, the Twi'lek in The Prisoner when they first all met. Didn't she make fun of it? Like, you know, how'd you get that thing or whatever?
She sort of did, but then at one point, Mayfield implied that Gian and Din had made that child together.
Yeah, that was the thing. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
although we do know that humans and Twi'leks can have kids. We've seen it multiple times in the Star Wars universe.
We have.
Star Wars. What?
Rebels.
Yes, Rebels, and then, of course, in The Clone Wars, right, Nathan?
Yes, there was a clone who defected and settled down with a Twi'lek wife and became a farmer.
And a father.
Yes, but not a bounty hunter. That was a whole different farmer.
It was. So, after they pulled the old switcheroo with the drivers of the Juggernaut, Mayfield and Din have a few moments to talk about things, which we've discussed already. And then things get squirrely because they see blown up Juggernaut transports along the side of the road. And then they see giant explosions in front of them after hearing calls for help over the Imperial.
See, if they had just realized that they were in a television show, they would have realized that there's no reason that they would have had to have gotten into the Juggernaut unless something was going to happen on the way to the place.
Yeah. Totally. Did you guys find that there was yet another Easter egg here? The comms display comms panel was exactly the same as the one that Han Solo uses in Episode 4, A New Hope, right before he says, boring conversation anyway, and blows up the big black microphone. Anyway.
I did not catch that. That is cool, though.
Yep. It even had the double microphone input. Yep, so he could say boring conversation anyway, Joseph. So, Joseph, when you saw Din fighting the pirates, you said you were glad to see him doing the hand-to-hand. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that he ran out of ammunition in his Imperial blaster pistol?
Kind of, because you know how stormtroopers be. They just shooting that thing forever.
Yeah, we never see stormtroopers have to reload those E-11s. But this obviously wasn't an E-11 rifle. It was some other pistol, so...
Like the DH-14 or something like that.
Yeah, some ridiculously limited scope weapon here. But although,
also during that fight, when the pirates had the little gaffy stick thing, I don't know.
Spear deal?
The spear, yeah.
I thought they were going to like crack Din's helmet to where he would have to take it off and then show his face to Mayfield.
Yeah, this series has taught me...
That almost happened.
It did almost happen. This series has taught me, reinforced the idea to me that plastoid armor is basically useless. It can't stop blaster bolts for the most part. In Ewok weapons and then this spear and various other gaffy sticks... blacksmith hammers, almost anything can just crack it, shatter it to pieces. Well,
they were just doing hand-to-hand combat and it was like shattering.
Yeah,
and it's like you see it crumble in front of his pauldron.
Yeah, I'm not sure what plastoid armor actually protects you from, except perhaps it works against old school slug thrower projectile weapons.
It protects you from a sad feeling.
It protects you from feeling sad, yes.
Or when you get rained on.
It was also being controlled by Boba Fett, so.
That's See, I think Joseph is actually more correct than he even realizes. I think the whole point of the armor is more to make stormtroopers uniform. Now, obviously, from an entertainment standpoint, it is to give us faceless goons for our heroes to defeat and not feel bad that they're, you know, killing real humans. But from an in-universe standpoint, I think it serves a similar function to make stormtroopers just generic.
Yes, to keep them in line by robbing them of any sense of individuality, which is reinforced by the way Captain Phasma treats First Order stormtroopers, specifically Finn, in The Force Awakens, when she scolds him for taking off that helmet. Because taking off his helmet immediately signifies to everyone that he's an individual, that he has his own thoughts, feelings, reactions, etc. And that is the one thing the First Order cannot have from their stormtrooper corps, is any sort of individuality. So good call, Joseph. It's to protect you from feelings, not weapons. Whoa, that's deep, yo. Anyway, so Din is able to put the kibosh on the pirate attack at the beginning. He figures out real quick, like, that they're trying to blow up the Rhydonium instead of steal it. And then there is a bunch more pirates that show up. So he is totally thrown for a loop, if you will, about the amount of reinforcements. Because at first, it looks like he's gotten the better of them by, in one case, using their own thermal detonator against them. I do like the continuing theme of people trained in Mandalorian ways of combat can take out multiple enemy vehicles with one explosive. Because we've had two episodes of that now. Boba Fett blowing up two transports with one rocket. And then, of course, in this one, Din blows up multiple land speeders with one explosion from a thermal detonator.
And Boba Fett
and then we have another example at the end of this episode.
Yeah, with Boba Fett blowing up the two TIE fighters.
Well, and not just that, you mentioned it earlier with all the references to Han Solo. So we get the reference of Han Solo using the council. You get the reference of Han Solo with him putting on the stormtrooper armor. And now you've got, well, it's not necessarily Han Solo, but you got Indiana Jones when they're fighting on the tank and the guys keep falling off and they're getting the wheels, right?
Yes.
But I love this scene. It's so Mad Max-ish. It was awesome. I wish they had a little bit more with it, but it was definitely cool.
Yeah, Matthew is texting me. My other son, who is not on this episode, but has a chime in here. He says that Blastorn armor can protect you, basically like Kevlar, from particular kinds of laser fire. But if you focus fire, or you know, if you shoot accurately enough, it is not totally unbreakable. So yes, I guess it would be depending on the caliber, if you will, of the laser fire. Perhaps small weapons like Leia's sporting blaster don't work too well against Blastoid armor. But in the case,
lightsabers.
Yeah, lightsabers and of course Imperial weaponry itself, when you know how to use it properly, like Din Djarin and Mayfield do, you can just shoot right through stormtrooper armor.
That's why I was surprised like the Empire never really did anything with the droidica and the technology there.
I think something happened, and maybe we'll see this in a future episode of The Mandalorian, because you know Din used to be very anti-droid. I think something happened to where the general public just didn't trust droids anymore.
I meant like the droidica having a personal
combat
force field shield.
Yeah.
And that if they mass produced that for at least, you know, to some degree, short troopers would have had it, like, right? Because they're the front tanks,
and
right?
What if you're right? And next episode we see that dark troopers do have personal force fields.
Maybe.
Because that might be one of Moff Gideon's, you know, his ace in the hole is that his dark troopers have shields.
So lightsabers and Beskar only.
Yeah, Din's going to have to like throw the spear through one of their shields. That'd be cool.
Of course, you know, the way to beat those shields in the Clone Wars was by going slow. If something was moving slow enough, the shield wouldn't stop it. Anakin and Ahsoka taught Forrest Whitaker
how Saul to do Guerrera. That.
Nope, he's Forrest Whitaker. I've changed the character's name to the actor's name.
I am altering the role. Pray I do not alter it further.
But yes, they taught Saul Guerrera and his sister how to defeat those droids with droid poppers.
Yeah, yeah. So guys, as we continue on in the episode, Mita was watching it with me at lunchtime today for my second viewing. And we see, like I said, Din gets the better of the initial raiders. And then we had a bunch of raiders come and plow toward them. And Joseph, did you think that Din and Mayfield might bite the big one here?
No, because they're the main character. So.
Sure. But I mean, did you have any idea about
armor and all that?
Yeah. Did you have any idea about what the outcome might be, you know, what their escape might be?
Well, if the pirates did manage to, blow up the kryptonite things, then I would assume that they would, you know, do a barrel roll and get out of there.
Yeah. Instead, we had a couple of TIE fighters fly out of the refinery building and blow up the rest of the skiffs.
Surprise, the Empire's the good guy.
Yeah, and after they did that, and then the pirates that jumped off the skiffs and didn't get killed get gunned down by a bunch of shore troopers and stormtroopers. And Mita says to me, wow, I never thought I'd be excited to see TIE fighters, but she was glad that they had come in to save the day, if you will. And almost like 2 or 3 seconds later, Mayfeld looks over at Din and says, never thought you'd be happy to see stormtroopers, huh? And I was just like, there you go. That is the exact emotion they were going for. And, you know, even though this episode was directed by and written by Rick Famuyiwa of Rick F., you guys could easily tell that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau were helping with the overall tone, because the audience reacted in exactly the way that the storytellers were hoping that they would.
Well, you want to know something also about this? He also is the one who wrote and directed The Prisoner.
He is. Perhaps there's some sort of affinity that he has with Mayfeld's character, or just, you know, the rogues gallery, as it were.
I just think it was a character that he probably, like we talked about, you know, Nathan's point earlier, right? He felt he was unfinished, had more to do. And obviously being a famous person helps too, right?
Yeah.
But it's just somebody that you can relate to. Plus the fact that he was an Imperial previously just fit into the story then, right? So it makes the most sense.
Yeah. And now one thing, so we're getting a little long in the tooth for this episode, since we do want to have a few more minutes of discussion here. One thing I did like about the end of this episode, we sort of already covered what happens after they deliver the Rhydonium. The discussion with Hess and Mayfield's basically change of heart when it comes to, you know what, never mind, the Empire really is the bad guys because they killed their own people who were just trying to do their jobs. This episode gave Mayfield a chance to emphasize his sharpshooter past, because he is able to take one of the most primitive weapons we've seen in all of Star Warsdom, the Cycler rifle from the Tusken Raiders, and shoot from midair on a traveling Slave One the precise spot on the Rhydonium transport in the Juggernaut to blow it to Kingdom Come, and then cause the whole base to explode as the rest of the Rhydonium there that was being refined is just incinerated and atomizes the place. Derek, were you impressed by that shot? Because Finnick Shand and Cara Dune were.
Yeah, no, that whole end scene of them, you know, breaking out of the cafeteria and then climbing up out of the outside, and you got Cara and Fennec, you know, shooting down the guys, and then you know, the dialogue between Din and Mayfield was pretty funny, hilarious, and just that whole escape scene again, right? Just like they were doing in The Prisoner, you know, with Din was, right? So kind of, again, that feel, that's what I enjoy out of The Mandalorian. But yeah, just doing that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, like we talked about, I mean, it was the whole Richard Brake playing Valen Hess. I mean, that was just phenomenal dialogue delivery and execution. Again, where you just, I appreciate that in the writing, and again, that's just what made for me this episode fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Hess seemed like an Imperial officer cut right out of the 1980s. He was pitch perfect.
Yeah, it's just such a shame that Mayfield just didn't make it out.
I know, it's so sad that Mayfield got killed. The prisoner that they had, you know, released to Marshall Dune, he's dead. He got killed in a giant explosion. What are you going to do?
I heard that Eddie Izzard killed him with a tray in the mess hall.
There you go. I'll
kill you with this tray. Ah, good times.
It was funny because Mayfield's like, wait, I can go? Like, he was expecting them to say he died and then like shoot him, right? Like something an Imperial would do, right? Yes,
that is exactly what he had.
Because if you're letting me go, I'll go.
But I love how he kept like looking at Din, and Din finally kind of gives him like the head nod, like, you know, go.
I think one of my favorite parts about this episode was also when he shot Hess in the mess hall, and the rest of the guys in there eating just kind of stared at them like,
Short Trooper's just like, I'm getting lunch. What happened?
Like, did it really just happen?
He had like his little milk carton on his little food tray there.
Yes. Poor Short Trooper. Although, can we really call them Short Troopers at this point?
Yes, because that's their specialization.
Well, but they technically were on a waterfall dam, so there's a shore somewhere.
Yeah, the river, the whole river.
Sure. Okay.
It's just like you know, the ice trooper or snow troopers on Hoth, right? Anytime there's some kind of Arctic, snow troopers are there, and then anytime there's some sort of alpine or frontier,
water, fresh water.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that the ridge troopers the range troopers are there, like in Solo. And then with anytime there's some sort of amphibian thing happening, you got shore troopers of some kind. So I think actually, because snow troopers have specialized gear to survive in cold weather, and range troopers have specialized gear to survive in the harsh wilderness, I bet that there's something in shore trooper armor that they can use to help them with some sort of amphibious action.
It's their boots.
So the one guy who just got thrown off the side of the dam and landed in the water might still be alive.
He might be okay. Actually, he might be the sole survivor because the base got atomized.
If it wasn't like 1,000 feet,
but you know,
if it wasn't 1,000 feet, he'd probably be okay because he's probably jelly inside. Exactly. We talked about this last time.
The impact, the surface tension of the water is what killed him.
But the suit would be fully intact still, though.
So, going back to the Cara Dune and Finnick are impressed with Mayfield's sniper abilities, which is in itself impressive because they are impressive snipers as well.
Yeah, they're. Oh, I love those scenes of those two girls with those big guns. Woo! Let me tell you. Oh wait, my son's right here. I mean,
and anyways, on the way out, Slave One drops a special mine that we referred to earlier. Joseph, can you tell us a little bit about that mine?
Yeah, we see that mine also in during episode 2 when Jango was trying to get rid of Obi-Wan from chasing them off of Kamino. But yeah, that mine is like pretty cool because of the whole like echo sound.
Yes.
It's called the Sonic Mine, right?
Yep, it is a Sonic Mine. And it does exactly what it did in episode 2 here. Completely obliterates pursuing, or rather, tried to do in episode 2, sorry, completely obliterate a pursuing starfighter. But in this case, it actually works, whereas Obi-Wan was able to, not meet his demise.
Oh, yeah. Plot on.
Yes. Well, I love how the bomb, the way it's shaped, because that's the direction that the explosion happens only. Yeah. So Slave One never has to worry about the impact, right? So that's what I think is cool about it. Plus, it's also, just basically, how, bombers back in, fighting days, and they would, drop stuff behind them and all that.
Yeah, it always reminded me a bit of a outer space adaptation of a depth charge, because it would go off at a certain distance from the launching craft. I have a funny story about the Sonic Mine. This happened to me twice now. I've been to 2 Star Wars movie marathons, first for The Force Awakens in 2015, and then secondly with the kids and Nathan last year. My gosh, it was only about 12 months ago that we went to do the 9 movie marathon for the entire Skywalker saga when Rise of Skywalker came out, which was only last December, you guys. It feels like a lifetime ago. My God, 2020 is the year of hell. Anyway, so during both of those marathons, I dozed a bit during Attack of the Clones, because as longtime listeners of the show will know, that's my least favorite Star Wars movie ever.
Which is hard to believe.
It's in the top 9.
I can never sleep through all the movie because I always get woken up by the gigantic boah from the Sonic Mine that Slave One deployed.
Why is Attack of the Clones your least favorite movie?
So we'd like to thank you all for joining us for this episode of What a Piece of Junk. We don't have time to get into that topic. We will someday, though. I can explain to you all the myriad reasons why episode 2 is not only bad Star Wars, but pretty much bad filmmaking. But anyway, even though it's bad filmmaking, it is still a Star Wars movie. So as Nathan said, it is in my top 9 favorite Star Wars movies. What? There's only actually, that's not true anymore.
We got Rogue One, Solo.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, but yes. Anyway, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode, and then we're going to record a special episode of Snipsit, because so much news to talk about in the Disney canon this week. Derek, any parting thoughts about Chapter 15, The Believer of the Mandalorian?
No, but as we talked about last week, I think it is going to be very interesting what they do with this last episode. I still think that there's going to be a cliffhanger. They're not going to finish rescuing Grogu. I'd be so surprised if they get that, everything that we talked about, Dark Troopers, the Moff Gideon, Din light Darksaber, Beskar staff fight scene. Yeah. If Luke shows up, Ahsoka shows up, Bo-Katan shows up, Mayfield shows up. We haven't got only Greef Karga's has only showed up for 1 episode so far. So is he going to make a last return for this? So at this point, I don't know. That's what I'm thinking, is that we're going to get it as a cliffhanger where something is going to be at the end of this episode and dun, 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 season 3.
I so much anxiety. Nathan, any parting thoughts on chapter 15?
One parting thought, and it's regarding the parting thought that Din gave to Moff Gideon at the end of the episode.
Oh, yes.
He called Moff Gideon and quoted Moff Gideon back to Moff Gideon. He told Moff Gideon the same thing that Moff Gideon told him at the end of season 1. You don't know how much he means to me or what you have.
Yep.
I can't quote it word for word, but Din Djarin did.
Yeah.
He should have gotten Liam Neeson on him, though.
Hey, I will find you. Anyway, my last thought. Well, Joseph, any parting thoughts on Chapter 15, The Believer?
Well, I mean, like I said at the beginning, it made me believe. So
now, what did it make you believe, son?
That Ben Jaren is an actual fighter.
Okay, it made you a believer in his martial skills.
Yeah, his fist-to-fist combat.
Yeah, his hand-to-hand mastery. For me, I loved the duality of the meaning of the title, because you guys know I love duality in Star Wars titles. The believer being Din of himself, a believer in the code of Mandalore, the creed. But then in this case, the duality is the other believer that's showcased in this episode is Mayfeld himself. He becomes a believer in the cause of freedom and respect for fellow beings, because in this episode, he finally decides he's had enough of the Empire and shoots Hess in the chest right in front of everybody because he just can't take it anymore. And he overcomes his own cynicism to become a believer in that, yes, there is a right and a wrong. Everybody's got to be able to sleep at night. And for him, that now means I can't just stand idly by and let people be oppressed anymore. So yeah, thank you for joining us, everybody. Joseph, so great to have you back on the show. Before we head out, Nathan, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Facebook under my real name, Nathan Miracle, or you can find me on Twitter at Gooey Chewy, GOOEYCHEWIE, on Twitter. Derek, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Facebook under my real name, Derek Marsh, but mainly under the What a Piece of Junk Star Wars Podcast Facebook group. As we mentioned earlier, go on there, hit us up, questions. You know, Scott, Nathan, myself, we all hit it up, and we appreciate everyone that contributes, whether it's news or just questions in general, theories, all that fun stuff, just talking about Star Wars. You can also follow me on Twitter at HoodieDM83, or as I like to say, the Empire does no wrong.
And if you're looking for me on the internet, you can find me on Facebook under my real name, Scott Bultman. I'm over on Twitter at Scotticus Max, and I do write my own sci-fi novels, so you can check out my author website at writegreatscott.com. And once again, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Please do send us messages between shows to let us know what we can do to make it more enjoyable for all of you. And always remember to respect each other and respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.